Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Greetings and salutations. You're very welcome to episode 118 of Audiovisual Cultures, the podcast that explores different areas of film, the arts, and media. I am your host, Paula Blair, and I am joined this time by digital marketer Brandon Leibowitz, working out in sunny Los Angeles, helping people get their businesses noticed by search engines and much more. I thought it would be interesting to talk to Brandon because he's the sort of person whose advice I've been taking for ways to more effectively circulate and promote this podcast and my other work. The technological side of these marketing activities and their ramifications on culture quite broadly scare and fascinate me. Whether you're a business owner or a consumer, this affects all of us on the internet. So whether you're interested or not, I think it's important to get clued up and to know what we're doing when we post on social media and fill out our data selves. We'll hopefully get Brandon back again at some point because I, for one, need another dose of that California sunshine, if not for anything else. My thanks as well to those of you listening and reaching out with feedback, especially Dr. Laurel J. Carpenter, who featured in episode 61. That's a really lovely episode. If you haven't heard it, please do go and check that one out. And Laurel said, "Hi Paula, loved your interview with Dick. It's smart and funny and accessible, XX." And that was in response to episode 115 with Richard James Hall. Laurel, that really means a lot because accessibility is what we're all about here, and if we can make that fun too, then all the better. Now, on with the show! Brandon Leibowitz, I am so delighted to have you on Audiovisual Cultures. Thank you so much for reaching out and for your time today. Am I correct if I say that you're involved with or that you run a digital marketing firm called SEO Optimizers?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Would you be happy to tell us a bit about that company? Give us a bit of an overview about your work there and your background. Is that all right?
Yeah. I started doing digital marketing in 2007, kind of just fell into it and got my degree in business marketing. And the first job I got wanted me to do SEO, social media, kind of email marketing for them, doing kind of it all. And back then just realized that SEO is a way to get free traffic, and why spend money on ads if you get up there for free? So just focused on that over the years, or just how to get that free traffic from Google so you don't have to spend money on ads, and worked at different advertising agencies and different mom and pop shops and Fortune 500 companies and everything in between, helping them out with their SEO. And right now I have my own company. It's called SEO Optimizers, and help people specifically get free traffic from Google. Do a little bit of paid ads, but prefer to get you that free traffic so you don't have to spend money on ads.
Fantastic. I suppose just for anybody listening who isn't familiar with some of those terms, can we just talk about what SEO means?
SEO is search engine optimization. That means ranking websites on Google. So whatever you see on Google, that's due to SEO. Well, when you search on Google, there's ads at the top. Those are all paid ads, but right below that, those are the organic, the SEO, the free listings, and SEO is about getting you that free traffic from Google.
So Brandon, I've been listening to quite a lot of your appearances on quite a few other podcasts, and they've been just so useful and informative. I mean, for me as an independent podcaster who's trying to market this podcast and do so on a very low or no budget, it's been really wonderful actually to discover you and your generosity with reaching out to people. I also don't want to make you repeat too much of what you've been doing on other podcasts. I think it'd be quite nice to share those other podcasts because actually they've been really useful. I started listening to Talk Virtual with Erica Bates and Tools of the Podcast Trade with Jennifer Francis. And actually those, I found your other episodes of those podcasts were actually very useful as well. So I'd like to link to those. and see if there's anything you haven't covered on a lot of that other work you've been doing that we could tease out today. What do you think about that?
Well, that would be the best. That would be much better because I like unique topics instead of just asking the same things about SEO or digital marketing. Anything that could help your audience is definitely the best. So whatever works best to resonate with your audience, I'm open to helping out as much as possible.
That's brilliant, Brandon. I think to get you up to speed, then Audiovisual Cultures, we're primarily an arts and culture podcast, and we do a lot of things like film analysis, or we talk about art exhibitions, or we talk to researchers in arts and humanities subjects, and we're quite wide ranging across what can be considered as audiovisual cultures. And I was quite keen to talk to you in terms of, I suppose, the cultural phenomenon that has become social media marketing and SEO and all of these things, all of these areas. And I think my listeners are largely people who are creative practitioners. They're in the creative industries in some way, or they're researchers of these things. I'm hoping that all of us can learn from you, not just how to be better self-marketers, but also just to learn about what are the technologies behind all of this. I mean, maybe you don't get into all of this, but I'm curious about what impact there might be, I suppose, socially and culturally and that sort of thing. Are these areas that you ever get into with any of your clients, or that you think about? You know, what is it about all of this that you find interesting?
No, it's definitely stuff that I'd like to talk about. But yeah, it is interesting just trying to figure out Google and see what's going on with Google and how they want to control and run everything. But who knows what's going to happen in the future with them, if they're going to keep dominating the market, or is someone else going to take over, the metaverse going to take over, and then we're all just plugged in and none of this matters anymore. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the future, how this impacts everyone. It's making you just, everyone just plugged in pretty much.
I actively avoid using Google. I wonder if you ever have to deal with people like me who are trying to market themselves, but they're aware that people are trying to find alternatives that maybe are less environmentally harmful or maybe less ethically compromising. Is that anything you cover as well in your work?
Well, there's like Ecosia, is that search engine where they plant a tree, I think, for everyone that searches. But if you look at how much traffic they get compared to Google, it doesn't even come close. Google just brings in probably 20 to 80% of the traffic to a website. Bing brings about 1%. Yahoo will bring maybe 1%. DuckDuckGo might bring 0.5%. Ecosia might bring 0.25%. And then just the rest is social media, email marketing. People are just typing your website in directly. But if you're not on Google, you're not going to get that visibility unless your audience is using a different search engine.
Okay.
Then you need to be on that search engine. Like, I think China's on Yandex. So they don't really, I mean, they're kind of censored, but it just depends on who your audience is. If they're on a different search engine, you want to be there. But for the most part, everyone's on Google unless they're accidentally using Bing, because Bing kind of tricks people into taking over the browser. Or unless people are aware of DuckDuckGo privacy, where they're not tracking everything they say they're not, and then Ecosia, where they're like helping out with their environment and trying to give back. But we'll see if they take off. But for now, they have no market share, unfortunately. Okay. I mean, they have some market share, but it's just so tiny compared to all these other websites. When I've looked at analytics over the past 15 years at websites, hundreds, maybe thousands of websites, it's all the same. Google just dominates with the traffic and doesn't even compare how much they get versus everything else. And if they took Google out of their business, most websites would probably fail, unfortunately, just because Google just brings in so much traffic, unless they're running paid ads. But if you're trying to get that free traffic, for now, Google just runs the show.
It certainly feels like that.
I mean, they have Gmail. So if you're using Gmail, they're reading all your emails. If you're using Chrome, they're tracking everything. If you're on the Android phone, they're tracking. If you're on the iPhone, they're tracking everything. I mean, no matter what, everyone's tracking and taking all the data and selling it off. And it's tough nowadays, but hopefully things change in the future. But for now, it's just selling off that data. That's all they care about.
I think just on that point of them selling the data that we generate and that we think maybe belongs to us, but actually we're handing it over a lot of the time, aren't we, without really realizing or being conscious of it. I've been thinking about this quite a lot because, again, as a podcaster, so much of my marketing in a way relies on me asking my listeners to help me to rate and review and subscribe and to share on their own social media and that sort of thing. You know, I'm very conscious that I'm asking them to work for me for free when I do that. So I wondered if, you know, if any of those sort of more ethical issues come up with what you do, or do your clients tend not to really worry about that sort of thing? You know, what do you think about those sorts of issues?
Well, you're not supposed to ask for reviews. Well, on Yelp, they tell you don't ask for reviews. It's against the terms of service. Right. And I'm pretty sure all those other platforms don't want you to ask for reviews. And if they do see you or catch you asking for reviews, they'll probably penalize you or remove a lot of those reviews. So you can't really be doing that. I mean, everyone does it, but you're not supposed to do it. But you can see, like, nobody really follows the ethics. Everyone's just trying to bend the rules a little bit, because if you don't ask for reviews, nobody's going to find you. So you have to do some. So it's like with SEO, Google says don't do anything and they're going to rank you, but you have to do some SEO, because if you don't do anything, your competitors are doing SEO. I mean, if you look at all these big corporations, they have teams of people doing SEO. So if you're not doing SEO, you're not going to be found. But to Google, they say don't do anything, but you just have to take everything with a grain of salt. Whatever they tell you, it's not really the full truth. They're just telling you what they want you to hear because they don't want you to really know what's going on.
I suppose in a way, for small creators and small business owners and the like, that makes things quite difficult, because you want to do things by the book, but you're also this tiny voice in this massive void, and you don't even want to be a monopoly. You just want your tiny little share of the action. So, I mean, is there anything that you come up with or you come across? Have you got any nice examples of where people do things really well and it's quite successful for them?
I mean, if you're looking at like podcasters, I think they say like, well, the number one is like Joe Rogan. He never advertises. He just does it all organic with grassroots. So that's the way to do it. But he's been doing it for so long and builds it up and one of the first people doing it. So that also helps out. It's like, if you're one of the first people on Instagram, you're going to get a head start versus everyone else that's just joining 8 years later. You've had 8 years to build it up that audience. But getting in at the beginning, taking full control of everything, don't just post it up on other websites like Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, Pinterest. You don't really own any of that stuff. You're just renting space from all these companies, and they could take you down anytime, and they have full control of all your content. Whereas you have your own website, you have full control of it, and you could do whatever you want, and you have that forever. Whereas you post something on YouTube, you're just renting space off YouTube, and they're not paying you that much. You might make $1 for every 1,000 views. So YouTube is not paying out that much, or Facebook's not going to pay you to post videos on there. So they're just taking all that content and using it to help grow their brands, help grow more traffic to Spotify, to iTunes, to Stitcher, all the podcast ones. You're just helping grow these podcasts versus you post it on there to get more exposure to ultimately lead back to your website, because that's ultimately where you want people to go, is to your website. You don't want people going on social media because it's too many distractions, too much noise. There's no engagement anymore. So if you do have a big following on social media, you post on Facebook, only 5% of the people that like your page will ever see what you post. Yeah. On Instagram, it might be 20% of the people that follow you will see what you post. So getting followers really means nothing nowadays, because there's no engagement. They're all like pay-to-play platforms that you have to unfortunately advertise on. And I try to stay clear of the advertisements if you can, because they're expensive and they add up and they're not that effective. People see the ads and they don't trust ads like they trust organic results.
When I've been listening to you and reading up on your website, I find that really refreshing, actually, that you advise not to use paid adverts on these platforms. Because normally when I go to webinars and things, when I try and get advice on how to increase my audience, increase my reach and grow the podcast and that sort of thing, that is one of the things that is suggested, is, oh, just pay a bit of money and promote your post or that sort of thing. And I'm very skeptical about that. So I'd love for you to, if you don't mind, to maybe talk a bit more about that. And maybe if you know about how the algorithms work, because I feel certainly as having a business account on Instagram, it feels as if they're deliberately hiding your stuff unless you pay them these days.
Yep, they have stockholders. So Instagram is owned by Facebook, and Facebook went public. They need to make money, and they realized, if we don't show your content to everybody and put this little blue button that says boost this post up there, people are going to start clicking the boost this post to show their content to everyone that follows them, because Facebook realized, if we only show your content to 50% of the people that like your page, and we put this little button here, people are going to click it and spend money. And they're like, all right, how about we show your content to 45% of the people that like you? People still clicked it, then they dropped it to 30, 20, 10. Now it's 5% of the people that like you will ever see what you post without you clicking that little blue button to boost the post. But never click that blue button, because that's just throwing money to Facebook. That's not how you run ads. If you're really trying to run ads, you have to go into the Facebook ad manager. If you're trying to run Instagram ads, you have to go in the Facebook ad manager. Don't click that blue button. That's how you just throw money away because you don't get full control. It makes it easy to run an ad because you just click that button, but you really need to run ads properly if you're going to do them. And that's through the Facebook ad manager. But even then, it just depends. Is your audience on Facebook? If they are, then run some ads, but make sure you lead people to your website or somewhere where you get full control. Don't just promote somebody to Spotify because you're really just advertising for Spotify and helping grow Spotify, which is going to help you grow your audience. But ultimately, you want people to your website because that's where you have full control. You try to capture their email addresses, maybe get some whatever your conversion goal is. But that's where you can actually get people to convert versus just being on the podcast or sending people to like Spotify. Because what if they're not on Spotify? What if they're on iTunes and you sent them to Spotify? They're not going to listen. Or if they're on Stitcher or iHeartRadio, there's too many options out there. But if you have it on your website, it has all the options right there. Then they can pick and choose to how to play it. Or even have it natively embedded on Facebook. But even then, you're just helping Facebook.
Yeah, that's really good advice. I think that's a really helpful distinction, actually, between the Boost post and the ad manager. I hadn't heard that before. So I hope that's really useful for other people as well. But it does feel, I mean, it makes a lot of sense, but it also feels very, I don't know, almost hurtful that you have to pay to reach your own audience, you know, the audience that you've already built, and you have to give them some money so that all of those people might see your post. Yeah, so that's a frustration. And I know that I, for one, have scaled back a bit on social media. And I have, as you've been advising, I've been trying to build the website and make improvements. You know, when I've got a bit of time, I'll go and just fiddle with something and try and just boost it a bit more. So is that one of the main things you tend to advise, is people having a really good website?
I just advise that you own everything. Don't rent space from other people, because what happens is if you put all your eggs on one basket, like if you just focused on MySpace and then Facebook emerges and you just stick with MySpace, you're going to be like, now you're just gone. No one's going to really be finding you. So you want to also diversify. You don't want to just focus on one social media platform, but ultimately you just have to know that they could take you down. They just disappear. Facebook is on the decline. Instagram is taking off, but TikTok is growing exponentially and just trying to be in front of the right people at the right time. But your website is yours, where you could get full control. No one's going to kick you off your website or censor you or take you down or anything like that. Whereas all these other platforms will do that anytime you do anything against their terms of service, which I'm not saying break the rules, but the rules are pretty strict. Like, they have some rules that don't make any sense. A lot of these platforms that will take you down for almost nothing, and getting in contact with them, getting your account back is almost impossible. So you don't want to just rely on these platforms. You want to have something that you have full ownership just in case something does happen, because you never know. These platforms just take you down in a second, or someone could flag you and they take you down just because that person flagged you, and that could be a competitor of yours.
That's great advice, Brandon. Big thanks to our generous patrons at patreon.com/AVCultures for keeping us going. If you're not already supporting us, you're missing out on behind the scenes content, exclusive audio, and early releases. As well as being justifiably smug for helping out an indie podcaster sharing free education, you can see all my mistakes and get extras no one else is hearing all straight to your inbox or personal RSS feed. Join the pod today at patreon.com/AVCultures. I'd like to ask you as well, it's to sort of put it back onto you for a moment. What is it about all of this that makes you want to work in this area?
Yeah, I'm just saying that I like helping businesses, watching them grow and kind of take off and get them from that startup phase or whatever phase they're in to the next level, and help them get that never-ending supply of traffic from Google so they could be sustainable and not have to worry about spending money on ads or running TV or radio or going door-to-door or cold calling people. It's just helping businesses, trying to really get them to their next level and help them succeed is the part that I like about SEO and digital marketing.
So do you feel like maybe there's the emergence of a movement back towards word of mouth, that sort of thing is important, and just this is a sort of newer digital incarnation of word of mouth, would you say?
I feel like after the pandemic, everyone realized that they need to be online. Like at the beginning, everyone was kind of just trying to figure out what to do around like March, April, May, June 2020. Around like September, everyone started giving me a call saying, I need to figure out what to do because I need to be online, because if I'm not online, no one's going to find me because there's no other way to get traction. And who knows what's going to happen in the future. So you got to be prepared, and everyone is connected. Everyone has a cell phone. So everyone's online nowadays for the most part. Mm. Everyone has a cell phone and it's too easy to connect. And if you're not online, you're missing out significantly, because if you're just a local brick and mortar store, you might get people from a 20-30 mile radius. But once you're online, you can get people all over the world visiting you. So it really opens up things and helps you grow exponentially and just take you to that next level of globalization, or being a national brand, or being a statewide brand, or whatever you're trying to focus on. Instead of just having in that little tiny area, now you could actually grow and reach a wider net of people.
Do you see any trends that might be indicative of what could be coming in the future, how all of this might look like? I mean, in a way, from somebody who's a very lay person in a lot of this, it feels like it's too much and it's going to implode at some point. I mean, do you think there's any way of being able to tell or predict or foresee what could be a natural conclusion for a lot of this, or where we're going?
It seems like the metaverse, and just everyone's just plugged in. Everyone's already on their phones all day, and if you look at the younger generation, they're all on their phone and they'd rather be inside there versus in reality. So fortunately, it seems like everything is going to be all virtual artificial experiences and simulations and things like that, where you're just plugged in all the time. But who knows how that's gonna, what that becomes. But that seems like that is the future that everything is going towards right now. It's just being plugged in permanently and experiencing whatever you want to experience versus experiencing life, which is weird, but that's what the kids are growing up on, and that's all they know, and that's what they're going to want to have.
Do you think that there's any hope that there might be some sort of hybrid way of doing this, I suppose, that we are at the moment, where we can come out of that virtual existence a bit more? We can leave our data self behind for a little while and just be ourselves in the real world. Like, do you think there's still value in that?
Yeah, well, be the older people that are not wanting to be connected, while the younger generation's all connected, will be the ones that are the outliers that just don't want to adapt, just like grandparents didn't want to use a computer. We're going to be the ones that don't want to use the simulation or the metaverse or whatever it's going to be. And but yeah, it's definitely going to be people that hold back. I mean, there's still people that are our age that don't want to be connected, but they're just out in the jungle somewhere. Or so it just limits you if you want to really experience and connect with your friends and family, whether they're in the United States, the UK, and wherever they're at. But if not, you're just going to be connected with whoever's in front of you at the moment.
I'm quite worried that we as a species are not just quite evolved enough for how fast everything's moving, and we're going to really come a cropper from all of this. I was wondering if you've seen The Social Dilemma, the film that looks into all of this. Have you? Yeah, I was just curious if you've seen it and what you thought of it.
Yeah, no, I knew about this for the past 10 years. I've been telling people it's so easy to change people's perception and change elections. And yeah, I mean, yeah, the stuff they want me to change in the past, they want me to change elections of like other countries I've never even heard of. I'm just like, I don't feel comfortable doing this. Like, this is like 12 years ago. And then after that, I realized, can't trust anything online. Everything that you see is done by marketing. Whatever you see online, it's not the best product or service. It's just better marketing. And you just got to take everything with a grain of salt. Just because it's at the top doesn't mean it's the best. It just means they did better marketing and Google trusts them, or Facebook trusts them, or some people trust them. And they're probably reliable. They're not going to scam you, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's the best product or service that you're looking at.
That's interesting. That's a real warning. What I take from that is always take the time to slow down and look through the options.
Open up multiple websites. Don't just get one point of view. Open up the first 10 pages of what, or the first 10 websites on that first page of Google or whatever search engine you're on, and you could see what the overall trend is. And if you just see that it's all the same thing that everyone's talking about, maybe that's the accurate answer. But if you see people are giving different options, different perspectives, maybe you want to dig in a little bit more and try to figure out which one's right or wrong, or who is right or wrong, or how to even differentiate, because it's just people's opinions. So opinions are never right or wrong unless it's a fact. But even there, you can't trust Wikipedia and stuff like that. There's people that go in there, and there's editors where they're top editors where they make changes and nobody looks at that. Whereas like, if we make a change, someone's going to look at it. But I know people at the top of Wikipedia that you pay them off, they'll go on any page, even like country pages, and change it. Whereas like, that's where like, they want me to change election in the past. I'm like, I don't feel comfortable changing elections. Like, I don't even know who these people are. And you want to change like countries' Wikipedias, but that's all that stuff where people just trust whatever they read online. That's what I've been realizing over the past couple of years, is unfortunately people trust what they read online, which you should not trust anything you read online, because who knows who's putting that stuff out there. And the only reason the Social Dilemma took off is just because ranking a website on Google takes 6 months. Getting something to go viral on Facebook takes 1 hour if you get a bunch of bots to get it going viral, which is very easy to do for not that much money. It's pretty easy to get stuff going viral. Now it's a little bit tougher because of the Social Dilemma and Cambridge Analytica and everything that came out. But before that, it was too easy to do. And it still is pretty easy to do. If you have enough money, it's easy to manipulate people's perceptions.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear that actually there were quite a few people who were on to what was happening and that we've all been contributing to all of this for all these years. I'm as much a culprit as anybody else from use of social media, including social media platforms that don't exist anymore, as well, as you mentioned. You know, so we're all in a way complicit, but I wonder if there's a way of turning it around, and it's maybe a question of awareness. But I think that's just really important. What you were saying is just read more of the pages that come up in your search results. Don't just go, this was always a bugbear when I was teaching. You had students who, even though they had access to a university library, they would go straight to Google and they would just use the first one or two search results that would come up as the references. You know, so I think we're seeing a meeting point here where critical thinking just needs to just be in common use, I think, even when you're just looking for something you want to buy on the internet.
Yeah, but it's tricky because a lot of these websites in the past would spoof it. So someone would make a website called the New York Times and it might be NY and then spelling times a little bit differently, like T, the number one, instead of an I, M-E-S, or T-L. So it's an L, so it looks like it. And then they write content, they share it on Facebook, they get to go viral. And they send people to the New York Times website. The whole point is to get you to click ads because they want to spoof it. So they'll write clickbait titles that are fake titles to get you to go to that fake website that looks like the New York Times. You go to it, and then ultimately they want you to click ads, or the more people that go to the website, they get paid per impression, CPM model, where every 1,000 visitors, they get paid a certain amount of money. So that's also why a lot of people were doing that. This was like 5 years ago, 8, 9, 10 years ago, a lot of these websites were popping up because it's an easy way to make money, very easy way to make money on social media or Facebook. It was too easy where you just, people would create these fake websites, fake articles, or they would just copy articles from the New York Times and just post it on their own page and grow their pages, and or they'd buy old fan pages, old celebrity pages that have millions of followers, rebrand them, and then push that content out there. And people see that this page has 1 million likes and they're pushing out content from the New York Times, even though it's not really the New York Times, but they're not really examining the URL. And then once they get to the website, it's an exact mirror copy of the New York Times. It's just has their own ads on it or their own content on it, and works really well because people just believe whatever they want to see online, unfortunately, or believe whatever they want to believe. It's that like consensus bias, but you just have to just understand that most of that stuff is fake. Most of the stuff that you see online is not real.
I think there's a real contradiction then in a lot of the messaging, because I think that a really big piece of advice that you tend to get is be authentic, be your authentic self. And it feels almost counterintuitive to do that on the internet, where so much is untrustworthy, so much is performative. Or as you say, it's trying to capture something else. It's a bit smoke and mirrors where it's just distracting you and then it's just grabbing your money. I mean, do you have any advice or just ways to cut through some of that noise? Like, how are people supposed to do that? How are supposed to be themselves but be safe in a space where so much is fake?
Yeah, don't go on social, because Google will catch the fake New York Times and they're not going to rank that website. Google's on top of all this stuff. Like, Google's been around for 20 plus years. They've seen every trick and they know how to spot that so quickly. Whereas Facebook is newer. They're not used to all these spammers, and Google's all about cleaning up the web and making sure there's no spam. So Google's easily going to find all that stuff and take it down. They don't know how accurate content is. Like, if someone writes a fake article or like inaccurate information, Google's not able to fact check all that stuff. They don't have time to fact check that stuff, but they have other signals that help them build that trust up. Like, how many backlinks do people give you? How many people like talk about this website? Whereas with social media, it's just how many likes do you get? And likes are pretty easy to fake. It's easy to go on these websites and buy these bots that will just like your content and get it going viral pretty quickly. So that one's a little bit trickier. Like, social, it's easy to spread the fake news. Google takes a little bit longer to spread fake news because Google doesn't rank websites immediately. It takes about 6 months to really rank a website. So that's one difference, is Google scrutinizes you a little bit more, whereas Facebook is just instantaneous.
That's really interesting to hear, because I think that these are things that I've slowly come to learn just through experiencing them myself. Yeah, it's been really interesting actually seeing how social media engagement has changed or has become non-existent or is just non-existent in the first place at times. And as a small creator, I've had times, and I know other friends of mine who are also independent small creators, that we've felt the frustration of, I'm working so hard, I'm doing all the right things, I'm following all the advice, and I'm getting some traction, I'm getting some engagement, but these people over here who seem to just be putting out nonsense seem to be getting loads and loads of likes and shares and engagement. And then I started getting targeted by people who try to buy your time and sell you packages where they'll share your stuff. And then I think, is that how they're doing it? Are they buying it? Are they buying the engagement? I mean, how prevalent is that? Is that happening a lot?
Pretty much, I would say half of all social media is fake accounts, but okay, who knows who's buying them or not. That's tough to see if someone is or not, but you kind of see through it sometimes if they're all from ghost accounts where they only have one picture, stuff like that. But who has time to sift through all the people liking your competitors' pictures and stuff like that? It just takes too much time, whereas you just focus on your own business if you're trying to see if they're buying fake likes, because if they are, it's working and there's nothing you could do about it. But you could just grow your own by putting out better content and being a better marketer by doing better marketing tactics to draw in real people, not the fake accounts.
I think that's a really key point. And I think that was something where I hit a wall where I was getting very frustrated. And then I realized, but that might not even be real. So like you say, it's just to put that energy, instead of getting annoyed about things, just put that energy into what you're doing and do good work. So yeah, it's good to have that validated by somebody who knows what they're doing.
Yep. It's going to be a lot better to focus on yourself and not worry about the competition, because you can't control them, but you can control yourself, what you're doing.
If you find text useful with your podcasts, we've got two options for you. You can subscribe to Audiovisual Cultures podcast on YouTube for captioned videos, and you can visit audiovisualcultures.com and click the transcripts tab. Both sites are linked in the show notes, along with information about this episode. So Brandon, just because I want to try and focus on you as well again a bit more, and just think, well, about your business, about the business that you're building, and it seems to be doing really well. You seem to be really busy at the minute. You're also very generously giving a lot of your time to a lot of people like me. Do you have a strategy? Do you have goals? Like, what are your ambitions for this business? Where are you trying to get to with it, do you think?
Well, I just want to keep growing my business and helping as many people out as possible to get that free traffic from Google or whatever search engines are out there in the future. But trying to help people get that free traffic, and want to just keep growing the business and try to keep building it up and building it up and take it to that next level, and just see how much I could grow it and help out others that have websites that need that SEO or social or paid ads, but really focus on that SEO, since that's a long-term strategy, whereas everything else, you're just kind of renting space off these platforms or renting advertising space off these platforms as well.
I suppose just while we're on that, would you like to point listeners to where they can find your website and read up more about you and what you do?
Yeah, so for everyone that's tuning in, I created a special gift for them. If they go to my website, it's SEOoptimizers.com/gift. They can find that there. And that's SEOoptimizers.com/gift. The US spelling, because I'm in the United States and couldn't get the ads version. But if they go there, they can find that gift and everything else about me if they want to get in touch and things like that.
Brandon, something else I do when I speak to a guest, I like to ask if you have anything in particular that you would recommend. Have you been listening to any podcasts or reading any books? Or, I mean, you're so well researched on all of this. You really, really know your stuff. Is there anything that you would point people towards to try and get more information on this, or just something that you're just enjoying that's not even anything to do with any of this? Have you got something that you'd like to just share with people?
Yeah, no, the best place to learn all this is probably YouTube. Just go search on YouTube for things that you want to learn about, and just make sure that it's from the past couple of years, because everything changes so quick with digital marketing. So if you're watching a video, or if you're reading an article or a blog post from 9 years ago, it might still be accurate, but things change so much that it might not be the most accurate to what's going on nowadays. So when I'm doing research and things like that, trying to find things that are topical and not things from too far in the past, but just trying to read as much as possible. Facebook groups are pretty good. nowadays to connect and like engage and learn and bounce ideas off other people. That's probably one of the better places I found is Facebook groups work really, really well nowadays. But again, who knows what's going to happen in the future. But YouTube is always a great spot to get that free content, and it's visual and people want video content. They don't want to just read a blog post or read an article. People's attention spans are too short nowadays. So visual content is really what everything is shifting towards, it seems like.
Is there anything that you're really burning to talk about that we haven't touched on? Is there any questions I've missed? Is there anything you think is really important that people should know?
No, I mean, there's so much with it, but just keep working at it and don't get discouraged. And it all takes time and nothing's immediate with all this stuff. So just keep pushing it and working it and building it up and building it up. And over time, it's just going to keep on growing. But don't just think everything happens immediately. It does take time to grow and get a following, get an audience, get your website ranked and all that stuff. So just don't get discouraged if you don't see that traction within the first couple months, because it does take time. Nothing is immediate. I mean, sometimes you go viral, but most people are not going viral, and it takes time to build that audience up and just keep on working at it and don't get discouraged.
And I think something I've really learned as well through making this podcast, it's great to have a small following, but a dedicated following, people who really are with you and are really there with you on that journey. And that's a lot more fulfilling than having just, I suppose, quite empty and performative engagement or sharing of things. And it, when it's coming from a really good place where people really are listening and they really are engaging and really are telling people that you're doing good stuff, then that's just much more meaningful.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree 100%. It's nice to have authentic people following you that really care about what you're doing.
Brandon Leibowitz, unless there's anything else that you'd like to say, I think I've learned loads from you and it's been so brilliant chatting with you. But if there's anything else that you'd like to say, I hope that's been a really good conversation.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me on and let me share some tips and my perspectives of everything going on in the digital realm.
It's really useful. It is. It just feels like there's so much noise out there and it's really nice to just cut through that and get some clarity and I suppose to cut the BS out of stuff as well.
Yep, definitely. Just get straight to the point and the real information.
Good. Well, thank you so much. Thank you for tuning in to this Cozy Pea Pod production. If you got something out of this episode, we'd really appreciate it if you could give us a good rating wherever you're accessing it and share it with someone you know will find it really interesting. If early releases and bonus content sound appealing, visit patreon.com/AVcultures and join one of our support tiers. If you want to help the show but can't manage a membership, we'd love you to join the conversation with AV Cultures Pod on Instagram, Facebook or Twitter. The music is Common Ground by Airtone, used under a 3.0 Creative Commons non-commercial license and is available at ccmixer.org. I've been Paula Blair, and you've been a fantastic audience. Mind yourselves, until next time.